This and other podcasts are available on the Gun Rights Radio Network, gunrightsradio.com. Podcasting freedom.
I'm Bob Main, and the reason I carry a gun is because I can't carry a cop. Episode 263 of your weekly Handgun World podcast coming right up.
Roland was a warrior from the land of the midnight sun, with a Thompson gun for hire, fighting to be done. The deal was made in Denmark on a dark and stormy day, so he set out for Biafra.
All right, another episode for you while I'm cruising down the freeway in the Handgun World mobile studio, cruising down Interstate 10 in South Texas right now. Anyway, you kind of expected that, right? I do a lot of these shows while I'm on the road, taking advantage of some windshield time. But you know, most of this podcast was done. It was an interview sitting in the comfort of my office, talking to John Hadaway. So John Hadaway is going to be my guest again pretty soon. He's been on this show numerous times. We had a chance to talk about a variety of things. We talked about the upcoming SHOT Show and some new guns that are being introduced at the SHOT Show 2014. We talked a little bit about the Duck Dynasty controversy, and we talked about how it affects the gun rights movement. I think you'll enjoy that. Now, the primary goal of this podcast is really not to pick on any guns or to pick on any manufacturer, so I really don't want you to take it that way. It's just basically two guys, me and John Hadaway, voicing some of our opinions about what you're about to see coming out at SHOT Show shortly. And also voicing our opinions about what's really happening in the gun rights movement. So I know you tune into this show because you want to hear my opinion, and you probably want to hear the opinions of some of the guests. And I have not listened to this interview since I did it live with John. So what I'm going to do is, I got it stored on my iPhone right now. You're going to hear it shortly. I'm going to play it to myself, and then I'm going to have some excellent comments about it when we return. Stay tuned.
Well, yeah, it's getting tough out there. Yeah, no doubt. I work in home invasions mostly. Some murder, occasional rape, and I'm a huge advocate of gun control. Absolutely. Competition is stiff, and it doesn't help that every time I kick in a door or smash a window, that I face the possibility of being shot and killed. Listen, the fact is, allowing citizens to own guns creates a hostile work environment for me and my associates. No one should have to work under those conditions. I say make them all illegal. Absolutely. Make all gun ownership illegal. I mean, I break the law for a living. I'm a professional, so it doesn't really bother me. I mean, but personally, knowing that most homeowners don't have guns, that would make me a lot more comfortable, more confident, and it would surely increase productivity. No doubt. This is no doubt.
Your local violent criminals work hard and put their lives on the line every time they attempt to murder, rape, abduct, or assault a member of the citizenry. They desperately need your help. With your support, there may finally come a day when a violent criminal can have his way with you or someone you love without the fear, anxiety, and stress caused by knowing there's a possibility his victim might be armed. Please show your support by voting for stronger anti-gun legislation, because criminals prefer unarmed citizens.
Well, John Hadaway is back. Welcome back, John.
Hey, thanks, Bob.
Well, it's good to have you back on the show, this first podcast of ours for 2014, the first interview you and I are doing. And how's the shooting and training world been treating you lately?
You know, I'll tell you what, Bob. It's and I think everybody who trains can tell you this. You know, really, December is always a slow month because you've got people who are focused on Christmas. The weather's less than ideal to be outside. And, you know, we're thinking about a whole lot of other things. And I think hopefully what we're seeing is you know, just like you and I are doing, people are beginning to get their idea about, hey, you know, I'm going to be shooting next year. What am I going to do training-wise? What matches am I going to compete in? I've got to get this load worked up. I've got to, you know, I see a lot of people doing a lot of reloading and things like that. So, yeah, I think it's going to be a good year, Bob.
I've been doing a lot of that, too. I've been planning out 2014, not just the classes that I'm teaching, but also the ones I want to take. And one of my goals this year is to do some more competing. So I've already got January 16th marked on the calendar for first IDPA match. Actually, I think it's the 18th. So it's
But Bob, we all know that if you compete, that'll get you killed.
Because, yes.
You know, that just ruins your tactical ninja-like stealthy skills.
It does. It ruins my tactical ninja. It'll get me killed. I'm going to go out there and have fun, even though I'm learning things. Although, I'll tell you what. Have you seen all that data, John? All the hardcore data that shows that competition will get you killed?
You know, Bob, I was just looking through those vast reams of data that everyone who ascribes to that theory has provided me thus far.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. You know, just clearly, it's a death wish. I mean, it's like buying a, you know, an Edsel and a Corvair, welding them together and riding down on top of the hood ornament without a helmet on. I mean, it's crazy.
Oh, that was a neat picture you just created for me. That's good. Yeah, all the data out there that shows that. You know, one thing I've learned is that, did you know, John, that living is hazardous to your health?
Wait a minute, Bob. Let's just clarify something. Life is a 100% fatal disease that's sexually transmitted, Bob.
You got it. That's true. but I'm going to do some more competing. That's good. So you and I got together. We decided to do this podcast. We have a cool announcement, but that's going to come up a little bit later. Lately, there's been this Duck Dynasty controversy, and unless people have been literally sleeping under a rock, they've heard about it. What are your thoughts on that and how it pertains to the gun community?
You know, Bob, I've done some thought with this, and I'm going to say something here. I don't want this to be shocking to you or to your listeners, but I've got a few opinions. Now, when I'm done with my opinions, Bob, I'm going to clearly come down on two things. One of them, I squarely agree with the Duck Dynasty boys on. One of them, I squarely think they're wrong on, and I can't support them on.
Okay.
But you've got to let me meander through my points. Is that okay?
As long as you meander carefully, yes.
Okay. Okay. First of all, let's start off with point number one. Okay? Out of everything I've read, out of everything I've heard, there is not a First Amendment issue here.
I agree.
I mean, you know, what I read in the First Amendment says that, one, the government will not start a religion. Okay, I haven't seen that. Okay? Number two, I haven't seen or heard that the government was shutting the Duck Commander down and not allowing them to speak or publish their opinions.
That's correct.
So as I read the First Amendment, Bob, it works like this here. We have a right to say whatever we want. However, no one guarantees us a megaphone to put it out there with.
That's correct.
And I would even go so far to say, Bob, is if at this moment you were to cut me off and say, I've heard all of that guy I want, it would not be a First Amendment issue because, Bob, this isn't my show, it's your show. And you get to decide what you want to put on. And, you know, since we're not forcing people, we're not chaining them up and forcing them to listen to this show, you've got that right.
That's correct.
So, you know, I think that's the first thing that I want to bring out. There's no First Amendment issue. So let's just back away from that and try not to look ignorant. Okay. Point number two is this. You know, Bob, if you put me down in front of someone and you say, John, what is your opinion of this controversial issue? I don't really know how we get to be outraged that we asked someone a question. They didn't scream it at us prior to us asking the question. And then we don't like their answer. Well, I'm suffering with how do we have a dialogue with anyone, anywhere, anything if we ask them a question, they answer the question, and then we're angry at their answer. So, you know, my point kind of goes like this. You know, what did you think you were going to get when you put the Duck Commander in front of a reporter for GQ magazine? I mean, what imbecile let that happen if you really didn't want to hear what the guy said?
Well, they wanted to hear what he had to say, and they knew what he was going to say, and they wanted, I think they baited him into saying it on purpose. And I want to add something to what you said, John. It's like if somebody were to interview you or me about guns. You know, if somebody brought Bob Main on as an interviewer, subject and said, hey, Bob, what do you think about the Second Amendment? I think pretty much anybody that, well, first of all, anybody who listens to my show, they're going to know what I say. They're going to know what you're going to say on that, right?
Well, if they don't, they've been living under a rock somewhere.
And yeah.
What I'm sort of conveying out here, Bob, is simply this. You know, how do I say, you know, I want to ask you a question. What do you think here? And then because I answer your question, I didn't spout it before you asked me the question. Now I'm intolerant because you asked me what I thought and I told you. Am I supposed to self-censor my opinions so to make you feel better? I mean, I'm really at a loss as to how people think that's going to work.
Well, and here's something. Here's how this all pertains to guns. Because we see this a lot in the fight for the Second Amendment. You know, it seems like the culture has gotten to the point in the United States of America where in order to be tolerant of someone, you either have to agree with everything that they say, and if you disagree with everything they say, all of a sudden now you're not tolerant anymore. Have you noticed that?
Well, Bob, I'd like to point out something as delicate as this may be, okay? And I'm going to share this with you, you know, from whatever perspective we want to go here. You ready?
Go ahead.
Okay, it goes like this. If we were to take his answers, his comment was really that he didn't appreciate anal sex with another man. Now, would that mean that if you were gay and you didn't want to have anal sex with another man, you would be intolerant? Who would take that position? He was discussing, in my mind, sexual preferences there.
Exactly.
What I'm saying to you is, Bob, I don't want to know what you do in your bedroom. I'm not going to ask you. I don't want to discuss what I do in the bedroom. I don't want to discuss what other people do. So what I'm saying is there's very few people that when you come to something as intimate as that, that we're going to be in lockstep on.
Right.
And so I'm a little shocked that we picked that out. Now, here's the second thing. You know, you talked about tolerance. I find that tolerance is required when you disagree with someone. Tolerance is not required when you agree with someone.
That's true.
Now, let me give you an example, okay? Because here's what I'm coming down on. You know, Bob, let's start off with just something I've given some thought about, and a lot of my Christian brothers and sisters, Muslims, atheists, agnostic, wherever you come down on your religious views, let me just say something here. First of all, marriage is not a civil right. It is not enumerated in the Constitution. Now, number two, marriage is a state's right. In other words, it is enumerated for the states. You do not get a federal wedding license. You get a state wedding license.
Very good point.
Number three, had we not turned into such a nanny state and depended on the government, whether you were married or unmarried, should have no advantage or disadvantage in terms of your socioeconomic status with the state. I mean, that's one I'm blown away with by saying we want to get this approved, we want to state this. Okay, fine. Now, here's the second thing that I found, or third maybe, whichever one I'm on, is this. You know, Bob, people are going to be shocked to hear this, but here's a little check of reality. You know, when you talk about marriage, even from a Christian Judeo standpoint, okay, the Bible at one time talked about polygamy,
yep,
and we've decided as a country that's wrong. So, you know, we've got to be real careful when we talk about, well, my God says this. Does he or does he not say this? Well, let's be specific. Number two, we have said polygamy is untenable, and we sort of say that the majority rules in these states. Now, don't get me wrong, Bob. I'm not saying we should take a vote for slavery. I'm not that guy. I'm not saying whatever the majority vote on, we're going for. Because here's the thing. You know, America, as a rule, everywhere I have seen it really voted on in terms of state constitutional amendments, even in California, gay marriage has not passed as a voter issue. It is only being done, as a rule, through legislative initiatives with the legislatures or court initiatives. Majority of Americans, honestly, if you force them to come down on it, they really don't like it. But most people really don't care anymore.
Yeah.
My point is about the glad crowd and some of these other people is, you know what we won't put up with, though, is we will not put up with the crowd that won the right they wanted, and then they want us to like it, too. You won, but don't make us like it, you know? And that's part of what I think the backlash here was is, hey, guys, you won what you wanted. But don't get mad at me because I don't like the fact of what you got.
I think the same thing applies to guns, John. You know, the gun rights advocates have won a lot of battles lately, especially after Sandy Hook, when I know a lot of people, including me, were kind of afraid that we were going to see a lot of really restrictive legislation, and we did not. Even though we won, the anti-gunners don't necessarily like it. And then again, they're not very tolerant either.
Hold on a second, Bob. I think the example would be this. Look, you know what? I don't care if in California you have gay marriage. Just let me get out before you make it mandatory, okay? What I'm saying is, look, I can accept the fact that the anti-gunners don't like the fact that I may be able to buy a modern sporting rifle. Okay? I'm going to live with that. I'm not going to rub your nose in it. I'm not going to make you own one. I'm not going to make you come over and clean my gun. I'm not going to make you participate with me. And I'm going to try not to be unseemly about that. I'm going to try to be a good neighbor. And I think that's what we've lost here is this thing of, well, we can disagree and we can be good neighbors. And that's part of what I'm mostly concerned about here is this idea that if I have an opinion different than you, I'm intolerant. No, it's not intolerant. It's I disagree, and that's legitimate.
Well, and let me add something to that, John. I want to ask you a question. Would you agree that being a gun owner and carrying a gun is a specific lifestyle?
Well, except for one thing, Bob.
What's that?
This is the one difference I'm going to make. It is enumerated in the Constitution in the Second Amendment.
Yeah, it is. But I mean,
sexual preferences are not.
Well, you're right. They're not. But even though the Second Amendment is enumerated in the Constitution, it is a lifestyle. People can choose whether they wish to exercise that right or not, correct?
I agree that it is a lifestyle, Bob. What I'm saying is it is a constitutionally protected lifestyle, unlike many other lifestyles.
Right, you're right. And where I was going with that is it seems like our culture that we have in the United States, our culture has accepted two real big lies. The first lie is that if you happen to disagree with someone's lifestyle or their choice, that you're a hater. And the second lie is that if you love somebody, it means that you agree with everything that they do. And both of these lies are nonsense. You don't have to compromise convictions to be compassionate. In other words, if you're a person that's anti-gun, or if you're a person that is anti-Bible, that's fine, but just because I may not agree with your lifestyle doesn't mean I hate you, and you shouldn't hate me if I want to quote the Bible and carry my gun.
You know, Bob, I think that's well said, And I think a lot of people get that. But one little piece of this is that it is completely okay for me to be apathetic and not have to take a stand for your lifestyle too. You know, what I'm saying is
right.
You know, Bob, if I don't care, that's still my constitutionally protected right a lot of times, is to not care. Now, that's what I think we have lost here in this whole discussion was, is you asked the guy's opinion, he gave it to you.
Right.
Now, people don't like it because he has a right to that opinion, and gee whiz, you know, we want everyone to clap and go yay for us. Doesn't work that way. You're not going to get everyone to clap and go yay. Grow up. And that's part of what I'm saying here. Let me go to my next point from an economic standpoint.
Yeah.
Business economics 101. Okay, here goes. One, you do not play poker with a man who has more chips on the table than you have and go all in with him when he has very little to lose and you have everything to lose, and which is what A&E did. You know, they went to this guy and they said, oh, you can't say that. We're going to, you know, punish you. We're going to do this. And he says, well, you know, boys, I don't know if you noticed this, but I'm the duck commander before I started this show. I've got millions and millions of dollars. They love me. I'm the highest rated show on your program. Take me off. What do I care? Walmart still sells my clothing. You know, Cracker Barrel still sells my clothing. I'm going to get another TV show, and you guys are losers. I mean, you know, that had to be the dumbest business move of last year that I saw. And I'm just like, you know, you don't pull a bluff like that. You don't call a man who's holding a pad hand and a lot of chips.
You know, John, I 100% agree with you. And people who follow me on Facebook, if you go back and look at some of my Facebook posts about this, I said the exact same thing. I said, I can't believe that A&E has made such a stupid business decision. Forget the Bible references. Forget the references that Phil Robertson made about homosexuality and things like that. This was a stupid, stupid business decision by A&E. I think it seems apparent that they realized the stupidity of their decision and they reinstated the guy. I think capitalism won. I think at the end of the day, capitalism won on this, and A&E still wants to make the money.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. You know, and Bob, I think the last part of this is, and let me put it this way. You know, one of the things, just being pragmatic, I have heard this said. You know, we have to look at how we want our movement to be portrayed. I'm talking about the gun rights movement now.
Right.
How do we want this to be portrayed? Well, my first thing is, you know, we have a constitutional amendment saying this is, in fact, part of the fabric of our nation. Well, that puts us in a different league with everybody else, and we need to make sure we identify not with a social trend but a legal civil right, okay?
Good point. Good point.
The second thing is, you know, Bob, and again, I'm being pragmatic, I do not find it repugnant to say that I can decouple a lot of things that are my preferences and line up with people who feel the same way as I do about guns. You do not have to agree with me on pretty much anything other than guns for us to agree on the gun thing. You know, I have friends who own guns in the gun rights movement who have different preferences, proclivities, whatever you want to put on it. I don't agree with all of them, but we agree on guns. I'm okay with that. They're not asking me to endorse everything.
Right.
And I think that's one of the things that we have to look at in this country is say, you know, it's okay for us to agree on some things and disagree on other things. That's civil. And we do that. And we have a discourse. And that's what, you know, I find alarming is that to disagree is, you know, tantamount to homophobic, and it's this and it's that. It's the other thing. You know, I'm not sure that people understand. What I find insulting is we look at the civil rights movement that African Americans went through, and, you know, they paid with their lives, they paid with blood, you know, they paid dearly and suffered dearly for what they got, which were basic civil rights enumerated in the Constitution. And I look at that and I go, you know, that's great. But to equate other things with that same suffering, I find a little offensive. And that's part of what we've lost, what words really mean. And to say someone is a bigot, to say someone is a homophobe, to start throwing ad hominem attacks at people because we disagree with them and demonizing them. I mean, look, we were another week away from someone making a Hitler reference to him.
And you're probably right.
The first one that makes a Hitler reference just lost the argument.
Yeah, you're probably right. Well, hey, even those of us in the firearms community, people have made Hitler references to us, too.
And that's what I'm saying.
When
you descend to that level of ad hominem attack, you've lost the ability to have a discourse on this. And I think, Bob, I think clearly those are the things that come to mind for this. Now, I'm just going to say, you know, if we kick this around enough, because I have two broad statements I want to go out on with this.
Go ahead.
Okay. What do I clearly stand with the Duck Commander on? You ready?
Go ahead.
I love Benelli shotguns.
Yep.
What do I disagree with him on? And I'll take the flak for this right now, Bob, and I'll pull anyone to task on this. I do not duck hunt. The meat tastes terrible. I don't care how you cook it. I will not eat a duck.
Well, you know, I'll differ with you on that. I love eating duck, but oh well. We agree to disagree.
Bob, I'm good with that. I mean, I really am. What I'm saying is, though, you know, is just simply this. I don't have to line up on anything the man said. You know, I don't have to do that to have my own opinions and my own thoughts. And whether I think he's right or wrong or indifferent, you know, I think we got to go. It wasn't freedom of speech. It wasn't civil rights. It wasn't hate speech. We don't have to feel one way or the other to say, hey, I like Benelli shotguns too. You know, I like guns too. And not everything calls us for an answer.
Exactly. Well, the one thing I'll go out on here, and then we're going to move to the next subject, is this. If you look at the First Amendment of the Constitution, because you brought that up in the beginning, the first word of the First Amendment is the word Congress. And it refers to acts of Congress. The First Amendment says, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof. That's the statement about religion in the First Amendment. Well, in this whole Duck Dynasty thing, Congress didn't do anything. The government didn't do anything. Phil Robertson had the perfect right to say what he wanted. A&E had the perfect right to fire him if they would have carried through with it. I think they realized it was a bad decision. But the other thing we have to realize is the second part of that phrase. Congress should also not prohibit the free exercise of religion. And that often gets forgotten about. They should not prohibit the free exercise. Phil Robertson has the right to freely exercise his religion. Anybody else listening to this show right now, whatever religion you have the right, the constitutionally protected right, to freely exercise whatever it is that you believe. And that's what I'll go out on.
Good.
So, with that said, let's move to the next topic, which the third topic I want to let everybody know as you're listening to this, we're going to talk about the SHOT Show. Before we get into the SHOT Show, we got kind of a cool announcement to make, don't we?
I think so, Bob. Why don't you go ahead and do it?
Well, you and I and Ben Branham have teamed up, and we are going to, you know, Ben and I have been wanting to take our show on the road this year, and we're doing that. So we, the three of us, are teaming up, and we're going to teach Beyond Concealed Carry, a two-day enhanced class at your range at the Nighthawk Custom Training Academy. I'm pretty stoked up about it. How about you?
I am. I'm very, very excited about it.
What we're going to do is we're going to do this on June 7th and 8th. It's going to be a two-day class, 8 to 6 each day. The investment's $400. What I'm really excited about is you are going to add to what Ben and I are already teaching. You're going to add some pretty cool stuff. You're going to add some lunchtime lectures, I understand, and some other things out on the range, aren't you?
You know, Bob, I really, when we first started talking about this, you know, I said, hey, send me your curriculum. Let's talk about it. Let's see what we can do. And we've really been talking about this behind the scenes for, I'd say, a month or more now.
Yep.
And, you know, Bob, when it comes to training, when it comes to putting a class together, I really think that there's four, I call them my four F's of training that I look for. And this is always something I've kind of done in designing classes or doing classes. But, you know, the first one is, and these are in no particular order, but the first one is, you know, my four F's are this. Fun, fears, function, and fellowship. And what I think that a class should have, and I'll kind of relate this back to what we're doing. First of all, you know, the class should be fun. I mean, I've gone to training before that is just dry and morbid and just, I mean, it's just, we call it, you know, it's going to be some slow driving and sad music played for 2 days, boys.
Like a country and western song?
Oh, yeah, yeah. The next thing is fears. And what I say is this, a really good training class should help you face your fears. And I think that's part of what we do in training because, you know, as we look at what goes on, there's two things that occur that training really should help you with. Stress and fears.
That's right.
Stress is a motor mechanics issue. Fear is a mental issue. And I think that a class should help you to know you can face your fears and persevere. Function. And I put function down really in two categories. There is the weapon, which is you, and the hardware, which is what you brought to fight with. You should learn how to function, how those two things function and interact and operate. And lastly, fellowship. And I say fellowship because this, Bob, too many times, as shooters, as gun people, as adults, whatever you want to put on it, and I find this, I'm even going to put as men or women, we tend to get in silos. And what we begin to believe is we're the only person that believes the way we believe about guns, that has this issue with shooting, that has this, that has that. Because guess what? We read magazines, we read articles,
right.
We listen to podcasts.
Right.
But we don't get out there and realize, you know what, I'm the same as everybody else. I can get better the same as everybody else. I can invest in me as everyone else does. And it lets us understand how much more normal we really are than we thought.
You know, John, that's a good point. Let me add to that. You know, people have been listening to me for 4 years on this show talk about all the training classes I've taken. And the fellowship, you're right. The fellowship is probably the most important thing that I've gotten out of every class is the fellowship. Like you said, to get out there on the range and realize that other students struggle with the same things I struggle with, have success with some of the same things I have success with, and we learn together. That fellowship, I mean, boy, there's people from the Mag 40 class that I've been to at your range, the Suarez classes that I've been to. There are people that have been, that still keep in touch with me today. We're still friends. They still email me. They Facebook me and things. The fellowship of fellow gun carriers is probably one of the most important things.
And, you know, Bob, as we talk about this class, you know, what I want to stress a little bit from my looking at it, okay, and how do we do these four things in this class? And let me cover these really quickly.
All right.
You know, the first thing is fun. You know, as we look at shooting, we've got a lot of things in there that are what I call crowd pleasers. You know, they're fun to do. Dang it, it's just fun to shoot a gun.
Yeah.
You know, it's fun to shoot a gun fast. It's fun to shoot a gun and do different things. So, you know, I look at it and I go, man, we got a lot of fun stuff in there. Now, facing your fears. You know, Bob, as I looked at the things I could add to this, I consistently come back to, and this is, I guess this is one of the things, when you draw people out and you say, tell me what your fear is with that gun, with running that gun. Tell me what your fear is. And you know what they tell me consistently is something along these lines come out the worst. You know, it's not so much that I'm afraid that I might need to protect myself, but that I might need to protect someone I love. And in that moment, I either won't be up for the test or I'll choke.
Yep, very good point.
And so some of the things that we have built into this particular class are facing some of your biggest fears. You know, one of the things that we put in there specifically was, you know, what do you do to rescue someone you love who is being held at gunpoint?
Yeah, and, you know, we're going to rely heavily on you to teach that part because Ben and I have not been teaching a whole lot of that, and I'm glad that you put that in there. You mind if I give people just a quick course description?
Please do, please do.
All right, well, the first day, Ben and I are going to spend some time teaching you some of the basics of, well, we're going to start with marksmanship, then we're going to talk about some basic dynamic movement, some defensive scenarios, shooting from cover, moving and shooting, advancing and retreating, defending a hallway, one-handed shooting with both hands, shooting around barricades, using cover, shooting steel on the move, how to make a hit quickly out of the holster, stuff like that. You're going to spend a lot of time talking about, like you mentioned, and you're going to spend a lot of time teaching rescuing someone that you love, right?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay. So that's what people are going to get. The second day, you're going to get a lot more of that. We're going to pick up the speed a little bit. We're going to cover things like the OODA loop. And I like what you wrote in here in this curriculum, John, how mammals fight and rescuing someone that you love at gunpoint. I'm going to be a pretty tenacious student when we get to that part. I need to learn that stuff.
You know, Bob, here's where I was going with that. You know, one of the things we have to understand in overcoming our fear is knowledge. Knowledge is what helps human beings face their fears and not to freeze and not to shirk away, but to say, you know what I need to do here. I know I've got the knowledge to do it. How am I going to do that thing? And so, you know, part of what I want to do is take some time and really explain how the human body works, how to overcome that, and, you know, to give people a really simple plan that they can execute. And so understanding how you fight will help you to understand how your opponent fights, to help you to understand how to get inside their loop rather than them getting in your loop.
Yeah, that's really cool. And like I said, I'm looking forward to being a student in that part. Something else I like that you've added to this curriculum, John, you're going to be delivering a lecture during lunch. So these are working lunches. And you're going to talk about things like what to do if you're caught in an active shooter situation and something I've never seen taught in a class before. I'm really stoked about this. How to use modern technology to enhance your security. Tell us about that.
Well, let's start off with the active shooter. You know, Bob, one of the other things when it comes down to fear is this. I'm at the mall. I've got my child, my family with me. You know, we're at Dillard's returning, insert whatever. We're at, you know, insert wherever, returning this, or we're buying this, or whatever. Why people go to the mall, I don't know. But anyway, when you got Amazon to order stuff, okay.
Yeah, I know.
but you're there, and all of a sudden, it becomes not a robbery, but it becomes an active shooter situation. People want to know, what should I do? They don't have a plan, so they try to formulate one right then. Well, we're going to sit down, and we're going to explain what motivates an active shooter, what you need to be concerned with, how you need to evaluate the situation, how you have to decide, and what you're responsible for and what you're not responsible for. And in doing so, we're going to clarify with people a lot of information that's just wrong, that they have wrong in their head of what they're going to do or not going to do, and how not to get shot by, oh, I don't know, the police perhaps. You know, one of the biggest things that we find in law enforcement training when we do something like this is what we call blue-on-blue fratricide. You know, where cops shoot each other in this situation. Well, imagine an armed civilian, what they're going to do. So, you know, there's a lot of information that people need to understand to have a plan to survive this. So that's really important. Now, when you talk about using modern technology, you know, Bob, I have this little joke. It goes like this. You know, in 1969, they used all the computing power that NASA had to fling a man to the moon. We have more computing power in our front shirt pocket with our smartphone, and we in turn use it to fling birds into walls. and you know, that's a little joke towards angry birds, but you know what, Bob? We have more computing power here, more network access, more information, and yet we use it for Facebook, but we don't understand the huge potential that's out there to garner information, relative real-time information, communicate back and forth, provide safety, provide a breadcrumb trail. There's a whole lot of information out there that people can really use. We also, Bob, and I say this because I know that, you know, the NSA is recording this for us, so we don't have to.
Right.
But, you know, a lot of people don't understand simply how to completely shut down a cell phone, like an iPhone or something that doesn't have a battery pack. There's a special technique that you have to use so that phone can't be pinged anymore.
Really?
And, you know, I'm going to show people how to do some of these things and show them how the military teaches people to not have their phones tracked and talk about a few things. And I find that, you know, at first people look at this and some people yawn and some people then they go, oh my gosh, really? But we're going to talk about, you know, this whole thing. How many times have you heard this, Bob? Well, if I come home and I notice the front door's open, you know, do I call the police? Do I wait? What do I do? Well, guess what? With modern technology, I'm going to give you an answer where you know 100% what to do and don't have to foolishly call the police and don't have to search your house.
So I guess it would be safe to say this is not just a shooting class, but this is a personal safety class.
Well, Bob, is again, I look at this and say, if I'm the weapon, what's the tool? And so I want to put people in situations where I give them information to face situations that are their fears they may never face. I'm not saying it's an irrational fear. I'm saying it's a fear because they feel like it's beyond their scope to deal with.
Right.
And I want to give them tools to deal with that in the event it should happen. But I also want to give them some knowledge to say, here's how you should function in that. And then also to say, guess what? You're going to hear some questions and go, God, I am so glad Bob asked that question because it sounded so stupid when it was in my head. But God, I'm glad he asked it. And John answered it. And now I know. You know, I mean, that's part of the fellowship. So part of what I'm saying is, Bob, you know, your class said, hey, great rock solid foundation, but we've got them for another day. We need to give them some things, some tools in that toolbox. I know people hate for me to say that sometimes, but to face your fears, to develop you as the weapon, and to understand how your tools function, and to realize you're not alone.
Yeah, and you know, again, I want to encourage, if you listen to what John's talking about here, I want to encourage couples to come and take this class because, you know, when John starts to teach things like how to use modern technology and what happens if you're in an active shooter event, you know, guys, you might find that you might be with your significant other or vice versa in a situation like that. So you both need to know this info.
You know, Bob, it might really be nice, and I'm going to share this with you, might really be nice to know, to tell your wife, like, for instance, how about this? Honey, here's what's going to happen if I have to shoot out the car window on your side of the car. Here's what you need to do so that I don't blind or deafen you. That's something we're going to do in this class. We're going to show you how to do that. Another thing, how about this? How about some way to communicate with other people in your life that I'm about to take this hostage rescue shot. Here's your plan. Without saying anything. You know, here's some words that you might need to learn to speak to someone who has someone you love who's taken hostage that might be really effective going with the other things that we're doing here. And you go, oh my gosh, how simple was that? And I'm not going to say it on the air, but there's a really simple plan here that allows you to be really effective in these things. Well, you don't know till someone teaches you. Well, those are fears that we're going to give you a plan to face to take some of the fear out of those situations because they're horrible enough on their own.
Yeah, this is awesome. And again, you know, folks, the three instructors are myself, Ben Branham, John Hadaway, June 7th and 8th, 8 to 6, $400. You can go straight to NighthawkCustomTraining.com and click classes, or I will put a link in the show notes, probably in it'll be in the show notes in every episode from now until the class, a direct link to John's page where you can get signed up. I think for $400 for the 2 days, by the way, it's rain or shine. Bad guys don't care what the weather is, and neither do we. I'll never forget that rainy Mag 40 class there, but we did it anyway, and we trained. I think for $400, John, this is a tremendous value.
You know, Bob, I think this. You know, if you invest, one other thing, Bob, we didn't cover.
Yeah.
This is one of my most requested topics by new shooters that we put in there.
Sure.
Is on Saturday night, after we get done shooting, we're going back to the classroom. We're going to clean our guns, and we're going to show you how we clean our guns. We're going to show you what we do, why we do, where to oil them, how much oil is enough, products we recommend, we don't recommend, what we do, what we don't do. We're going to let you ask questions. I'm not saying we got it right, but it's an opportunity to go, well, you know, I read on the internet that you're only supposed to use the oil off the back of cat fur on your M&Ps. Well, no, you know, what oil do you use? I use, you know, and I'll tell you how I select what I select, but it's an opportunity. We're going to clean our guns. That way we know they're ready the next day. But it's an opportunity for you to learn how to take your gun apart, clean it. And some people have never really done that, or some people think, well, I got to clean it this way and I got to do this. So I'm going to go, nope, this is what you need to do to clean a handgun. And, you know, so that, I mean, and for Glock shooters, we're going to bring a bucket of muddy water and leave them in it overnight. You know, because that's all a Glock ever needs is a bucket of muddy water. We all know that.
That's right. Yep.
A salty muddy water. I'm sorry. Salty muddy water.
You want to hear something funny about cleaning guns? You just reminded me of something. I've never told it on the show before. Here goes. It'll take about 30 seconds. It was 5 or 6 years ago. I was at a gun shop in Dallas when I was living up there. And I was just kind of perusing the gun counter. And a guy came in and spoke to the gunsmith. And this guy was about 20 feet away from me. And he was telling the gunsmith, he had a Glock 17 pistol. He says, my Glock's not running very well. Could you look at it and let me know what's going on? So I hear the gunsmith, you know, field strip it. And he pulls the slide off and he says, what is all this stuff inside your gun? And the owner said, it's graphite. And the gunsmith said, what? And the owner says, well, it's lubricant, isn't it? I didn't have any real lubricants, so I sprayed it all with graphite. Well, notice to Glock owners, I guess graphite eventually screws up a Glock. Don't try that at home.
But, you know, Bob, we're going to clean, I'll guarantee you, we're going to clean an XD. I'm sure there'll be one in the class. We'll probably clean a Walther. We'll probably clean a Glock or two, an M&P, a 1911 of a couple of different stripes I'm sure might show up. You know, we're going to clean guns. Whatever you bring, we're going to clean.
And that's cool.
And one of the things we put there was to bring a basic gun cleaning kit. We're going to have tables and lights, and we'll be able to sit down and clean everything, okay? Now, we'll put your gun back together, and I'm going to show you how I verify that my guns will run without having to shoot them at the range so that you know you've cleaned it and it should go bang.
This is good stuff. This is good stuff. This is definitely way beyond concealed carry.
So, you know, Bob, I think that for $400, you know, people are going to get their money's worth. Now, one last little thing. If everyone has ammunition, that'll make my life simple. If you don't have ammunition, you need to contact me, and I can make arrangements to have ammunition here for you in standard calibers. So that's 9, 40, and 45. No, I can't do 357 SIG. No, I can't do 38 special, I can't do 380, I can't do 32 H&R, 327, whatever. I mean, you know, if you've got three of the major calibers in there, I'll cover you, okay? So you let me know. It's obviously an additional cost, and I'll work that out on a student-by-student basis, but you'll get some good ammunition that'll run, and I can take care of that. So there's not an ammunition excuse. And no, it won't be terribly expensive. No, I don't want to sell any extra ammunition. You know, it's for you to come to class. I have ammunition for you.
And should they use the phone number that's on the website if they need to?
That'd be great.
Okay.
That'd be great. We'll make arrangements. We'll have it here for you. Pay by credit card. It'll be sitting on the desk when you get in.
Folks, this class is going to be probably every bit of 800 rounds. So plan accordingly. You got till June. And good stuff, John. I really like what you're adding to the course, which is why I wanted to team up with you. And it's going to be a neat event.
And, Bob, I will tell you this. Yesterday we had our first person sign up for the class.
Nice. Very nice.
I predict this class is going to sell out, and it's going to sell out quicker than a lot of people think. So what I'm going to tell you is, and I don't say that about every one of them, you know, I have a lot of classes. I have some classes that don't make, and we just cancel. But I can tell you that I really believe this class, based on the interest I have gotten from just simply doing a Facebook post, I've gotten inquiries, I've got, you know, voicemails to return calls from, I've got some emails I'm behind on, and Bob, you know, I've already got someone signed up that I didn't talk to that just found it, signed up, and, you know, so I think we're going to not, I think if you're interested, you don't need to wait too long. You need to get signed up. You got to put a deposit down, which is $200, get your spot reserved, and then you can pay the balance before class.
Okay, so $200 deposit, 50% gets your spot reserved.
That's correct. Get your chair in class. And, you know, Bob, the other thing I'm going to say is this. This is a limited number of seating. This is not, we found you another seat. No, when it's full, it's full. Because one of the things we talked about really specifically is we've got to make sure we maintain an instructor-student ratio where we can really work with the students and guarantee that they get the appropriate amount of attention to have the opportunity to get better.
Yeah, and there's a very good chance the unnamed trucker is going to be there helping us out as a safety officer.
Oh, I'm
also.
Out. I'm out.
Yeah. Matter of fact, now that we know that the unnamed trucker is going to most likely be there, the one student who signed up is probably going to cancel.
We're probably going to sink the whole course.
But Trucker said he's probably going to be there to help out as a safety officer and learn some things. And I also want to say this, for people who are not real familiar with Arkansas's geography, Centerton, Arkansas, and Johns Range is in northwest Arkansas, not very far from Fayetteville. So if you're in Oklahoma, it's a short drive. Anywhere in Arkansas, it's a short drive. Kansas, Missouri, it's real easy to get there. So northwest Arkansas, you can Google Centerton, Arkansas, but if some of you are listening to this and don't have immediate access to the internet, it's up in northwest Arkansas.
I think that we can give you airport codes. We have a recommended hotel that you'll get some feedback information on where we recommend you to book. Bob, you've stayed there before.
Yep.
You know, it's a good hotel, reasonably priced. I think it's like $65 a night. Includes a breakfast, nice room, hot tub, you know, pool, all that good stuff, indoor pool.
Yep.
So you know, we try to take care of you all the way around.
And for those of you who love Southwest Airlines like I do, Tulsa, Oklahoma is not very far away.
That's correct.
So, good. Well, now you've got some stuff that you want to say about SHOT Show.
Yeah, you know, Bob, we are starting to see the guns trickle out. And I want to say that what I know about what I'm about to talk about may range from some gossip to rumors to I've completely made it up. So everything I'm saying here is subject to change and denial at a later date, okay?
Subject to revision.
Yes. First of all, Glock has introduced a pistol. I guess you could call it that, in 380. It's slightly smaller than the Ruger LC9, much bigger than the Ruger LCP, as I understand it, in 380 Auto. And the question was, why didn't they introduce it in 9? And the rumor that I have heard is this. Glock is pretty much master of scaling the platform and getting the platform out there and then changing this and that. Well, here's the deal. The problem is, from what I was told, and this is all rumor, so again, subject to deniability, the little Glock is already made in 9, and it is completely difficult to shoot. It is not a novice gun, and it is a handful, and the 380 is going to be the one they introduce. They get people to shoot, they get them sold, they introduce the 9, going to piggyback on that. But that if the 9 was just brought out first, it's really a handful for a novice shooter to shoot. And I've said it all along. You know what? The smaller the gun, the larger the caliber, the more experience the shooter required to do anything good with it.
Right.
So that was what I heard is Glock's logic trail. So that is complete internet rumor. So I'm going to throw that out there. Second gun. What I consider quite possibly to be one of the ugliest guns I've ever seen and completely answers a question that no one, and I mean no one, has ever asked, is the new Remington 51 in 9mm. Now, the gun was originally made in 380 little boxy little thing, I think 32 as well. What Remington did is they upscaled the gun, dehorned it, as they call it, took a, what I call a clickable grip safety. Now, I tell you, you know, if everyone knows if you were designing a 1911, you would not put a grip safety on the gun. It was put on there for the cavalry.
Right. Now,
I guess the 51 is aimed at the equestrian crowd. That's all I can figure.
Yeah, I think it is. It is. It's for the horseback warriors. That's who it's for.
Yeah. So, you know, the only thing it's missing is a bottom, you know, European-style mag catch on the bottom of the magwell. But I digress. again, answers a question no one ever answered or ever, you know.
And what is that? What is that question that you think that they're trying to answer that nobody asked?
How can we keep para ordnance building guns, you know, and make something that no one actually needs or wants? That's the only thing I think the question is.
Well, you know, that could be. John, let me say something about the Remington R51. When I first saw the press release on it, I looked at it and I thought, how cool. And then I kept reading and reading and I went, oh, grip safety.
Mm-hmm.
They pulled a Springfield XD.
Oh, God, in metal.
And yeah.
Ugly.
Yeah. I mean, they pulled a Springfield. What on earth do you need a grip safety for? And I know I'm going to get hate mail. I covered this in my safeties podcast. People are going to start trashing me and give me 89 different reasons why you need to have a grip safety. But at first, when I saw the Remington R51, I thought, I might want to get one of those. Well, no, I'm not. Grip safety. Goodbye. That was it.
And now, next one that comes to mind. Colt introduced a new 380, as best I understand. Polymer gun, polymer lower, metal upper, single stack 380 in the little pony size.
Okay.
I'm thinking to myself, you know, I could dig on a compact double stack polymer 1911 style gun, but why would you want it in single stack? And the only answer I came up with was, they're trying to keep costs down. They went polymer on the lower to keep labor and tooling costs down by doing a polymer injected, I'm assuming. I haven't seen the gun, which is going to be an interesting little piece. Now, am I going to buy one? No. Are people going to buy them? Probably more than the R51. But kind of an interesting little looking little gun. And I think, you know, it better be price pointed right.
It better
be in the market position right, because it's got competition from SIG, you know, with their little, was it 928, 938, 9 something.
938, yeah. What you're talking about the Colt Mustang XSP is what they call it.
Correct.
And it basically, I'm looking at a picture of it right now. The new Colt Mustang XSP basically looks like a carbon copy of a SIG 938. Of course, people say that SIG copied Colt. Who cares who copied who? They look exactly the same. So basically, it's a polymer-framed Colt Mustang is what it is.
And I'm saying it better be cheaper than the 938 and better be more reliable than the 938. I've had lots of friends with 938s that, look, the only one I know that has had a worse record, in my opinion, than the 938 is that double tap gun. Every one I've ever seen has malfunctioned, double fired, and had been sent back.
You've seen a lot of 938s malfunctioning?
I've seen a bunch of 938s that were choke masters that had reliability problems. I've shot one gun one time and thought, God, I love that trigger, but this little thing's hard to hold on to.
Yeah.
That was my thought on the gun.
I had a P238 and I was not real impressed with it.
Yep.
So that's what we're going to see. We're going to see a lot of buzz about the new Glock, the new Remington, and the new Colt.
And we can't leave out that Duck Dynasty has partnered up with Mossberg along with Jerry Mischlack, and they've got camouflage Duck Dynasty, you know, everything Mossberg could throw at the kitchen sink. Yep. It'll still be a Mossberg, but it'll be a Duck Dynasty one. Go get them, boys.
It'll still be – it's probably a Mossberg 930, I'll bet.
No, they got like 7 or 8 guns.
Oh, really? 7 or 8 different ones? Okay, so they're still going to be Mossbergs. They're just going to have camo and Duck Dynasty logos on them.
Well, they've got a pistol that's in an AR configuration.
Okay.
They've got an AR, I think a 223, an AR-22, and then, you know, seven or eight shotguns.
Okay.
So you know, my opinion has been serious purveyors of shotgun work. Now, I'm not talking about hunting. You know, hey, I've got some nice over and unders I enjoy. I've got other shotguns. But, you know, serious shotgun work falls into this category. For the most part, most serious shotgun operators, not, you know, sponsored by someone in particular, end up with an auto made by Benelli or a pump made by Remington. I mean, that's where the serious purveyors usually shake out. Now, there's outliers and exceptions to all of that, but that is the rule. That's the decimal point. You can go left or right of it, but that's the decimal point. Well, you know, where does Mossberg come in? Well, if I can't get a Benelli, or I can't get an 870, it's probably a pretty decent alternative if you don't like FN. You know, that's kind of, it's beyond the gray at their price point. And that's where I come down on this little cult. It better be a price point gun.
Yeah, it better be a price point gun. And, you know.
And people will buy the Glock because they're sycophants and have to have one. And this Remington 51, its mother will buy one copy, I predict, and probably regret that one.
Well, even though people think I'm a Glock sycophant, which I'm not going to touch the new Glock 42. First of all, I already have a 380. What's the point? I have what I consider to be the best pocket 380 on the market, and that's the Carr P380. I totally love it. I have shot a lot of 380s, and I simply cannot find one that is better than the Carr P380, and Carr's not paying me to say this. I've owned the doggone thing since shortly after they first came out. It's reliable. The recoil is soft. It's extremely small. It's well made. You know, the trigger's nice. What's not to like?
Yeah, I think it's pricey, Bob. It's expensive. Not everybody can afford it, and a lot of people will buy two Ruger LCPs for the price of your car. So, you know, you're an elitist and I hate you.
Well, well, they have a Carr CW380 now for...
Wait a minute. No, Bob, let me say this, because this is what I get all the time. Bob, your car is not twice as good as a Ruger LCP. Well, wait a minute. Is it okay if I have the money to go ahead and get it because it's a little better? I mean, do we buy everything in this world on price? Did you pick out your wife based on price, young man? I mean, that's what I want to
ask. Ooh, I'm not going to answer that. I'm not going to answer that.
Bob, my point is not everything in this world should be bought on price. Sometimes the additional quality is worth the extra money.
Yeah, it is. And you know what? The new CW380 is priced very close to the LCP and still, I think, a far better value. So, anyway, so
well,
there's.
You're an elitist. That's all I can say.
Yeah, I am I'm an elitist. As a matter of fact, not only am I a gun snob elitist with all these Glocks that I own, but I guess I'm very intolerant as well.
You are. Yeah, and you're intolerant. Let me throw some ad hominems. You know, you're a Nazi. Okay.
But so that's the SHOT Show stuff coming out, and unfortunately, I'm not going to make it to SHOT Show. By the time this airs, people will already figure out that I'm not going to be there. Wait, when is SHOT Show?
It's in 2 weeks, Bob.
It is the second week of January?
Yeah, I've got the dates here in front of me, but I'm not going either.
Okay, this show is going to air probably on the 11th or 12th of January, so it's going to air right before SHOT Show, and unfortunately, and I've never been to SHOT Show. I'd like to go. I really, really want to go. January is always very difficult for me to do a lot of traveling.
Well, Bob, I tell you this. I went to the SHOT Show my first time a number of years ago, and then I said, oh, I have to go again. It was the most wonderful thing ever. And so I went again. That was the second year, and I went, you know, there's a few new things, but there's a bunch of the same stuff that didn't get made that they're still showing here. What's the deal? And I thought, you know, I'm going to skip a year. So then I said, I'll go every other year. So I started going every other year, and it was like, this is a little better, but I'm still seeing a bunch of the same old crap. And so then I said, you know, I'm going to go every 3 years. And I started going every 3 years. Now I'm out to every 5 years I go to the SHOT Show, and it's exciting. But if you go every year, you know, it's like, oh my gosh, I start dreading it. You get to see some new and cool stuff, but there's not that much new and cool that you haven't already seen at retail, talked to, had in a class, done whatever. And the stuff that is introduced, you go, yeah, how long? Well, we're going to have it out in the second quarter. Translation, I mean, you'll have it out shipping next year for SHOT Show. You know, if it's not shipping right now, you know, based on the gun industry, you're not going to see it for a year. So, you know, part of it is you see samples of things that may or may not ever make it into the free world, as in, remember that really cool Magpul Glock configuration with a flashlight that made it into a PDW?
Yeah.
the Magpul rifle that, you know, Bushmaster completely, you know, screwed up.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, I could just go on and on about things that we saw at SHOT Show. The hype was, you know, how long did it take before the Kel-Tec shotguns made it into the free world?
Yeah. Well, John, help me remember this. Was it Springfield that introduced the XDS at the SHOT Show, and then it took them like a year and a half to start shipping them?
You know, I think that was the XDM.
You sure it wasn't the XDS?
You know what? It might have been. It was. Now that I think about it, you're right. You're absolutely right.
And then it took them forever to start shipping them, and then, what is it, 9 months after they start shipping them, or a year later, and they got to recall them all and bring them all back.
Well, Bob, I got a better example than that. And I'm not even going to name the manufacturer, the gun, anything, but I'm going to tell you this. I knew about a gun that was being introduced in SHOT Show last year, okay?
Okay.
That was introduced last year at SHOT Show. Now, I ordered that gun in December. Okay, so I ordered the gun in December, put my order in with the manufacturer in December for a gun that was going to be revealed in January. I have that gun. Would you like to know what month I got that gun?
Let me take a good guess. You got the gun over a year after you placed the order.
Actually, 10 months.
Okay.
No, 11 months.
11 months?
And I ordered it when I saw the production samples coming off the line for SHOT Show.
Yeah.
And, you know, I'm like, oh, boy. You know, so I knew all the engineering was done. I knew, and you know, I'd seen the production samples maybe 9 months before I ordered the gun. Okay? So what I'm telling you is, that's the kind of lead time in this industry. One other thing we got to keep in mind is this. What is the purpose of a new product? Just strictly in a business concept, the purpose of a new product is simply this. It is to increase profits or take or drive market share. That's
right.
It. You can do that by stimulating products in your line, creating awareness. I mean, there's a bunch of sub-strategies, but that's textbook definition of what you have a new product for. Now, if the market is white hot and they're buying everything you can do, why does it make sense to introduce a new product in that market? That is the antithesis of when you want to put a new product out. So what I'm going to tell you is yeah, we're going to see a few new things come out, but what we're going to see is people who are finally going to commit to ship things that they actually have out there. I mean, I'll tell you something, Bob. How about this? I have in my hand, this is a different gun, okay? I have in my bag, and I've had it for almost 3 weeks. You ready?
Mm-hmm.
A gun that was introduced at SHOT Show last year. Now, the one I have in my bag was one of the first 75 guns that made it into the country.
Wow.
Now, I'll tell you what it is. It's a Walther PPQ 5-inch gun.
Mmm.
So what I'm telling you is that tells you the gun was introduced and how long it took for them to get the guns in. And I've had it for 3 weeks, and it's the first week in January when we're recording this podcast.
Mm-hmm. That's right. We're recording this. Well, we are recording this on January 3rd. It's probably going to go out on the 12th.
So to put it in perspective, you know, these guns that we're talking about right now, yeah, I'm sure, positive, they got some sales samples. Positive, they got some for gun riders. Positive, they have zero production out there.
Yeah, exactly. Well, since you brought it up, let's finish with this, John. Do you have one of the new PPQ M2s?
Yes, I have about 4 of them.
Ah, okay. Give us your thoughts.
Well, I got to tell you something, Bob. I believe that it has the best out-of-the-box trigger for a regular shooter and the best reset out-of-the-box of any polymer gun I have ever handled, period.
Wow, okay. That's impressive.
With the right ammunition, okay? And when I say right ammunition, keep one thing in mind. Most of the world, when it comes to 9mm, they hear 115 grain or 124 grain, okay?
Correct.
So what I'm saying is, with a 115 grain bullet, I'm convinced this is one of the most accurate polymer guns currently in production. I think there's one that's more accurate that's gone out a long time ago, but I'm saying take your Glocks, your M&Ps, your HKs, put them all up against this with a lightweight bullet. Now, I think the gun gives up something on accuracy, and I'm talking about, 25 yards shooting, groups with, not can you hit the target at 25 yards. I'm talking about the difference between your best group and your worst group.
Right.
When you get to 135s and 147s, which is not a European load, and this is a European gun, I think there's other guns that may be more accurate with a heavier bullet. But with a 115, 124, one of the most accurate guns I've ever seen, comes with a test target showing its accuracy out of every one of them you get.
And most of the 9mm available is 115 and 124 anyway.
Correct. From that standpoint, I think it's great. Number two on my list, replaceable back straps that actually, to me, probably the second best on the market. Let me tell you why. I think the first best on the market, and I applaud them for doing this, is the Smith & Wesson M&P, because you can change them because the tool is on board with the gun.
Right.
The most useless would be the Glock, followed by the XDM. But these are done, you can basically drive them out with, putting anything in there and tapping it down. You can drive a little roll pin out, change the back straps. It's not as easy as I'd like, but it's much easier than everybody else's system, so it makes it kind of a universal shooting gun. And actually, I think it's a pretty good-looking gun when you look at the craftsmanship that goes into the gun. Just aesthetically, you look at that and you go, oh, my gosh. Here's some people that still take pride in the things they build, and like the laser etching on the slide,
yeah.
The PPQ logo, the slide cuts. I mean, aesthetically, the gun is pleasing. Now, that's an afterthought, because some people like ugly boxy guns from Austria.
Yeah, some people like those ugly things. Yes, the ugly boxy guns from Austria. I don't know who likes them. I've heard that they're somewhat popular, but, definitely the PPQ looks a little better amongst the ugly boxy guns.
So, I've got several of them. Bob, I'll tell you some. I'll tell you how much I like them. Ready?
Yeah.
I think you know this. If you came to one of my classes and you needed a gun, the gun that I handed people to use out of the bag was a Smith & Wesson M&P in 9mm. And I had about 10 or 12, maybe a dozen of them at one time.
Mm-hmm.
And I had the Pros, and I had the Longs, and I had the Julie model, and I had, the Tactical Ninja model, and I had the Viking Tactics model. I mean, I had every model they made because I loved them all. Okay?
Yeah.
I own zero M&Ps right now, and I am buying the Walthers as fast as I can get them to replace all my M&Ps because I think it's an easier gun to teach a student to shoot on than any other gun.
Well, and if it's easy to teach a student to shoot on, then it's definitely going to become a very popular seller because that's typically one of the primary features that people look for.
Now, I want to share this with you, Bob. I've been teaching with this thing since early summer, and I would say conservatively, and Bob, I think if you saw my Facebook page, you remember that picture I posted with the back end of a SUV stacked with ammunition?
Yes.
Okay, all of that ammunition went through Walther PPQs.
Really?
Okay? Now, to put it in perspective, I know I've probably seen 50,000 rounds go down my range with Walther PPQ shooting them. And I can tell you this. I have only had two types of malfunctions out of the gun because I really wanted to know what was going on. I'll tell you type number one. As you know, my place can be subject to horrible weather.
Mm-hmm.
Well, this summer it was extremely dry, and on some of our bays, it basically turned into really fine, silty dirt. And we had people dropping magazines into that dirt, and what we had was, is magazines basically would just fill up with dirt and refuse to function. Our cure, we took the magazines apart, we shaked the dirt out of them, we ran a brush through them, put them back in, guns back in action. So, is that a legitimate malfunction? Absolutely. Do I think it was exclusive to the PPQ? Nope. I think any gun that was there would have had the same issue.
Any gun would have done it, yeah.
Just happened to be that I had a class of 12 people and all of them were using Walther products. So that was the first thing. The second set of malfunctions that I've seen, and hold on to this, Bob, because you're going to be shocked. All polymer guns, if you don't hold on to them, will short stroke themselves.
Really?
Even a Glock, Bob.
Really?
Yes, even a Glock. And so I've had some malfunctions where a and all of them so far have been female shooters, have, you know, kind of limp-wristed the gun. It didn't go fully into battery.
Yeah.
Strike the back of the gun. Honey, hold on to this gun. And I've had one set of malfunctions due to shooting the gun completely dry to failure. And I wanted to find out what happened on that. So we took one out of the box, didn't lube it, and shot the snot out of it till it just stopped. And so, you know, I guess what I'm saying is those are the malfunctions that I've had out of the gun, period.
Cool.
And I know we've shot over 50,000 rounds. Heck, there was 20,000 rounds in the back of that vehicle.
So, well, then you you like the gun. That's great. I figured you had some, and I wanted you to weigh in on it.
So I can heartily recommend the gun and tell you that, you know, and Bob, I think you know me well enough to know this. Look, you know, as much as I mock Glocks, if I thought, you know what, the Glock has all these advantages, I'll teach with that, hand it to people. You know, hey, I got people who want Glocks. We supply Glocks, you know. But if I just have to hand somebody a gun and teach them to shoot with it, that's the easiest gun to get them shooting well with. And that's important in having them face their fears.
Yeah, I wish that they would quickly come up with a subcompact version of the same gun.
Well, I own some PPSs.
Yeah, PPSs, I guess you own some of those?
Yeah, I've got a few of those.
Okay.
Got one in my pocket right now.
Yeah, let's save. I wanted to ask you some questions about that, but we'll save that for another podcast.
You mean you're going to invite me back?
I probably will do that. Yeah.
Okay.
I'll probably invite you back. I mean, you kind of, you know, you did a good job on this one. You know, I'll forgive a couple of little missteps, but I'll probably bring you back.
Thanks, Bob. I appreciate it.
John Hadaway, thanks for coming on the show. This was really good stuff. Come see us at the class, and more importantly, stick up for your rights.
Absolutely.
Thanks, John. Okay, a lot of information there. Thank you very much, John. This is the first time that I've listened to the interview since I recorded it, and you listened to it with me at the same time. By now, you've probably figured out this is not a middle-of-the-week show. You know, I thought about it, and I thought it was rather long, and it needed to be its own separate show, not just kind of something that I sandwiched in between two other shows. So the next interview I got coming up is going to be releasing next Sunday. So, again, I'm sorry if I misled you there in the first part of this episode telling you that it was going to be a middle-of-the-week show, but it's not. With all that said, what do you think? Give me some opinions on what John just said here. One way you can do that is my voicemail. My voicemail number is 210-646-1727. I want to promise everybody I'm going to get to your voicemails. You know, when these interviews come up, like this one and the one I got coming up next week, I got to jump all over these, and I got to take advantage of them. And I want to put my guests out there on the air as soon as I possibly can. But
It doesn't mean your voicemails are not important to me. 210-646-1727, or you can go to handgunworld.com. Scroll down all the way on the right side of the page. At the bottom, near the bottom there, it says a big call me button with a picture of a telephone. Click that call me button. It'll hook up your cell phone with my voicemail. Leave me a voicemail up to 3 minutes in length. Tell me what you think, and I'll answer your voicemail. I'll put you on the air. If you don't want to be on the air, just tell me that in the voicemail, and I'll respect your privacy. Don't forget about the Shooters Club. Hey, I'm giving away one of the guns out of my personal collection. I'm giving away my M&P Shield, and I've got some cool night sights on it. I've got the Ameriglow iDot Pro with the orange front dot. I got four magazines, 3.8 rounders, and a 7-round magazine. Good gun. Good gun. I have some other plans for a smaller pistol that I'll be sharing with you coming up later on down the road. The M&P Shield is a very, very popular pistol. Mine's the 9mm version. A lucky winner on the Shooters Club, a member of our Shooters Club, any active member, is eligible. The drawing is going to be June 30th. There's going to be some other winners, too. We're giving away 250 rounds of ammunition. We're giving away a range bag. We're giving away a class. One ticket to any class that Ben and I teach in 2014. Okay? You get one free ticket that anything that Ben and myself are doing. So... it doesn't count for the classes that we're teaming up with Glenn Tate or with John Hadaway. But any of the individual classes that Ben and I teach, you could win one of those as well. And if you can't use it, you can gift it to somebody else. So we'll be doing a drawing for one of those as well. Not to mention all the great benefits of the Shooters Club. We're putting up minimum one, sometimes two videos, two instructional videos. Good stuff. Everybody, I tell you what, our renewal rate is very high, so it tells me that people are getting quite a bit, and they feel like they're getting their money's worth out of it. $75 for the first year. You can also sign up for $8 per month if you can't do the $75 all at once. There's an $8 a month option. You can find all this at handgunworld.com. You'll see a Shooters Club page. Many thanks to those of you who have been supporting me on my Amazon store. Wow, thank you very much. If you make your Amazon purchases through my store, the link at handgunworld.com. On the website, on the page, there's a direct link to my Amazon store. Just go to handgunworld.com. You'll see the page that says Amazon store. It'll help support this show. I keep this sponsor free pretty much. You don't have to listen to a whole bunch of commercials like you do on other shows. I still kind of find that somewhat irritating. So the only way that this show gets support is if you take one of my classes, if you join the Shooters Club, if you buy through my Amazon store, stuff like that. Don't forget about my Suarez class. That's almost half full already. Close range gunfighting level 2. Coming up in April in San Antonio. The weather's going to be awesome. The class is going to be awesome. It's a new curriculum. I'm going to include some point shooting in that curriculum as well. I'm teaching that on behalf of Suarez International. Also go to SuarezInternational.com to look at all the other really cool classes that are up there. Ben and I have a night fighting course coming up. February 8th. That's coming up real soon. I've received a bunch of emails from people saying that they're interested. Time to sign up. $175. Learn how to use your gun at night. Hey, Dallas, Fort Worth, North Texas, Southern Oklahoma listeners. We're coming back up to North Texas. We're doing a March class. And that's going to be pistol fighting dynamics. That's different than Beyond Concealed Carry. You can read all about it. All the class listings are at handgunworld.com. That's it, folks. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of your weekly Handgun World podcast. I'm Bob Main. I carry a gun because I can't carry a cop. The loudest sound a shooter hears is a bang when he's expecting a click, or a click when he's expecting a bang. Shoot straight, shoot safe. Talk to you next week. Goodbye.